KYW News Radio Original Podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. Research shows that for cancer survivors and their families, respite can help with coping abilities. For Pete's Sake, Cancer Respite Foundation recognizes that. Ever since Marcy Shankweiler lost her husband Pete to testicular cancer at the age of 30, she's used the moment to change the direction of her life and help other families by way of respite experiences. I sit with her to discuss the mission of the organization and about their newest, most ambitious feat, Pete's Dream, which is now under construction.
We want them to come here so they can exhale.
And Charity Howard catches up with Vision Link.
There is life beyond vision loss.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly. Research shows that respite strengthens an entire family's ability to cope with a diagnosis of cancer. For well over 20 years, For Pete's Sake, Cancer Respite Foundation has provided respite experiences to families facing cancer in the Pennsylvania region. They operate on a structure of six pillars: family, physical, psychosocial, mental, spiritual, and financial health. FPS just broke ground on an ambitious endeavor and are creating the nation's first ever cancer center dedicated exclusively to families. The $25 million, 34,000-square-foot center will sit on 32 acres in the Poconos and will serve as a place of healing, as every square inch has been designed with intention. I sat down with Marcella Shankweiler, founder and CEO of For Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation, to learn more about what will ultimately be called Pete's Dream. Marcella, tell me about the For Pete's Sake Cancer Respite Foundation. How did that all come about?
A little over 25 years ago, I lost my first husband, Pete, to cancer. He was actually diagnosed at age 29. And during his illness, our friends hosted a Philadelphia beef and beer for us. And we took those funds. And I really was focused on, you know, offsetting the financial strain of a cancer diagnosis. But he had something different in mind, which was really to book a trip. And we actually went away on our respite, and it was really just a time for us to exhale, to reset, to reconnect, you know, to really focus on the premise that, you know, cancer can take so much, especially at a young age, but it cannot take the love that you share, you know, and how you live your life. So, you know, we went on respite and we came home, and a couple months later, as Pete's illness was progressing, he said, you know, wouldn't this be wonderful to give this gift of time, you know, this gift to really find your own definition of healing to other young patients and their families. And he sketched out the concept of a respite center, you know, before he passed away. And we put this in his obituary, and we really just started, you know, the idea of respite and making cancer respite part of cancer care. And we worked with oncology professionals, you know, mostly in the Philadelphia region, and, you know, have been offering respite to thousands already. So back in 2013, we started doing community respites because we were doing individual respites. So just families on their own. 2013, we looked at bringing multiple families together. Because they are young families, the average age of the person we help is about 36. So, you know, you feel like you're on an island alone in this. And then we started seeing that this gift of community, like families being across the table from one another, doing activities with one another, they were across from someone who knew what they were experiencing, you know, and the children the same way, you know, a 10-year-old who thinks I'm the only one that has a mom or dad that's sick, you know, now they see their other, you know, children who have parents who are ill. So we started doing that in about 2013. And then 2019, we said, let's pilot this in a very convenient location with an amazing hospitality provider, which is Woodlock. And the outcomes were amazing. We have 20 years of data. In 2019, that data really showed us like a magic sauce really was putting families in community. Still with individual units, but bringing them in community in programmatic settings. And that's really kind of the impetus. In March 2020, our board made a bold decision to really go back to that original vision. And then we just kind of launched it quietly from there. And we've been busy fundraising and fundraising and refining our program, so that every square inch of this respite center has been designed with intent and with a lot of feedback from oncology professionals.
Okay, just the premise of it really sounds lovely to me. I mean, as a survivor myself, I'm really starting to learn about how respite and, just being around nature and escaping and healing can really, really help patients. Tell me all about the center. I know it's going to be completed by the end of next year. Give me a complete description, kind of a visual of what the center is going to be like and what it will be offering patients and family members.
Well, I'll tell you first, we do have a website, peachdream.org. There's a lot of renderings on that. I think there's a couple key components of this center. First is we help all cancer types. We really go from 21 to 55, with the mid-30s being our average age of our patients. We have a lot of breast, a lot of colon, some of the more significant cancers that you see in that younger population. So we help all cancer types. We actually, too, really look at the entire family unit. So it's really the patient, then their caregiver, and then their loved ones. Some are children, maybe they have a couple caregivers. We're trying to get the unit that is really surrounding this cancer care, that's going to support them. So we really focus on that. And then what we do is we bring them up for 6 days, and it's 5 nights. All your meals are included. We really focus on time together. So what our data showed us over the years is this concept of, there's power in the dinner hour, right? Which was just being together in conversation and sharing meals. So every family will have 14, served meals throughout their stay. And then we have some really strong, I would call it kind of programmatic pieces. So what we're doing, we're putting in a dedicated art room that's going to be open 24 hours. We're going to be doing pottery and painting, some activities that are tailored to children, which is really significant. So, and it's purposefully open for 24 hours because some people can't sleep, right? So, I mean, some of the challenges is the darkest times are at night. So, we really want to try to pull that in and give people a space for that. We're putting an interfaith chapel in because the spiritual journey is very significant for our patients. We're doing a STEAM education room, which is really meant to, for our children to explore the creativity, not only of what's in the building, but what's also outside the building. We're on a 32-acre campus that's going to be exceptional. We have accessible walking trails. We're doing a wishing well, a labyrinth, a train garden, a butterfly and rain garden, just so many little elements that we just want to bring kind of the outside in and the inside out. Because there's something to be said when you hear, water flowing, or when you can take a deep breath of fresh air, and open your eyes and see sunlight twinkling off the trees. There's beauty in that stillness. So, I think that the main focus that I would say about this is it is about the unit around that cancer patient, because a patient's going to only be as successful as the people that are supporting them through it too. And they need support. And there's not a lot of support out there, for like the caregiver and like this. So we really are trying to pull them out of, collectively as a unit, out of their environment and place them in a very peaceful, safe, serene environment, for all of them to heal together. Because ultimately they have to return home to a very aggressive treatment plan that's going to be ahead. We work with oncology professionals in order to get into our program, and they have to be nominated by a member of their oncology team. So, because of that, we do have a fairly more significant advanced stage population. So it's a challenge, right? And we're here for a short period of time to really kind of create an environment that gives them coping skills that they're going to be able to take.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Marcella, from what I understand, you did say that this is Pete's actual dream. So I'm curious about Pete. Tell me who he was. What kind of a person was Pete?
No one's really kind of asked me that question in all these years. So there we go. First, when he got his cancer diagnosis at 29, I think that it really changed his perspective on the value of being present in life. So simple things like planting a tree or taking a walk, telling my mom and dad I love them more and more. You know, he made a bucket list of 100 things to do. And those 100 things to do were just so simple. Not that, you know, like playing golf without getting tired, you know, I mean, just putting in perspective all the day-to-day activities that we overlook because we have our health. When that happened, I think it changed who he was and it changed who I was as a caregiver. And, you know, from that moment, and then when we had the chance to go away, you know, I do say like the most profound part of our respite was, it was actually a moment of silence, which, you know, I think, you know, sometimes we don't stay still enough to hear the silence, but he and I were both sitting, we actually went to a beach where we went away on respite and we were sitting there and, you know, he held my hand and he just looked at me and he nodded his head and you could see a little tears coming down. And that was the moment, I think, where you recognize like our journey ahead may not be the outcome that we anticipate. No, but I really feel as though like he lived well and our respite really helped him die well too. And he died well. And that takes hard work. And it takes a lot of coping and communication with your loved ones who are around you in that journey. Yeah. So he made life meaningful.
Yeah, you know, I understand. And it's interesting to hear you say, I mean, you often hear people talk about living well, but dying well, that's not a conversation or a concept that a lot of people can wrap their heads around immediately or even try to understand until you're actually met with that moment. It is a part of life, but it's hard to talk about things like dying well. What are some of the things that you hope patients and their families come away with after they spend time at the new center?
This is the thing, right? I feel like when you have cancer, life is out of control, right? You don't have control any longer. And so first and foremost, giving patients control of what they are able to do and not do on respite. Like, we're going to have a lot of opportunities. You're here to create your own respite, right? And your own respite could be sitting on the porch every day and listening to the birds. I think that's kind of the beauty of it. So when they leave this respite, the fact is that knowing that they still do have control, because whatever their road lies ahead in their cancer journey, they're going to be able to put the framework together of how they think about it. The second piece is really having more significant and better communication from really just being present. This to me is being able to walk away, understanding the significant role of what communication can do to heal. So, you know, there's a physical side too that I hope, being able to ambulate, being able to eat well, sleep well. I mean, a lot of our patients say like they haven't been able to sleep in a long time, you know, and they can sleep on respite. So changing some of those patterns that allow them to be able to succeed in their treatment. And the other piece is like, this treatment's hard. Like, you've gone through it, you know it. It's not easy to always adhere to like the protocol that you need to do. And it takes effort. And then letting them know, like, they have the stamina to do this. When they get back and their doctor says, guess what? We might have another drug, or we might have a clinical trial. Like, giving them the stamina that they know they have that strength from it, right? And they can do that. And there's so many multitude of pieces, you know, about this. And everyone's going to walk away with a different piece. But I will say, I think most of them will walk away and knowing it's the simple moments can make the most extraordinary memories. And that is significant, especially for like the children. And, you know, we're doing a lot of outcome measures. So we've done 20 years of real world data. Like, we've really focused on looking at increased communication skills, increased coping skills, you know, having the ability to address anxiety and depression during the journey. And I think all of those pieces are only going to continue to be enhanced and strengthened because we're creating the center now. We've never had a place where we can really focus on improving the outlook, the emotional, the spiritual, the mental, the psychosocial outlook of a patient, their caregiver, and their loved ones.
And I understand that this is going to be the first of its kind type of center in the US.
How this is differs is that it's all cancer types to a younger population, all brought in together. We're going to be having 16 families at one time in community with very, very individual living arrangements. So they have private accommodations with everything purposely designed with them to completely cost-free, with stipends to even travel to the location, and really focusing on kind of the outcomes that we want to maintain. So we do have health pillars. So for example, like we have a physical health pillar. We're going to serve 60,000 meals in the center annually, which is a lot of healthy meals. The interesting part is it's 20 units with 100 beds. Four of those units are going to be designated for volunteer facilitators, which are really going to be, like yourself could come. People who've gone through the journey, who want to volunteer, families who want to give back or might have lost a loved one, oncology professionals who need to reboot themselves too, So the volunteer program is going to be a really significant part of this experience.
You did mention briefly, and I kind of wanted to get into that a little bit more, that patients will be kind of nominated by their clinicians at hospitals to be able to take advantage of the center. How does that work?
We work with like Penn, Jefferson, Christiana, Lehigh Valley, UPMC. I have all nurses that are our program coordinators. We do educational programs for the oncology professionals, and they get trained really in what our program entails. And we have like some clinical assessment factors that we look at with respect to the patient and their caregiver. And then they nominate that patient because, part of it too is we have to find the right timing, like for the patient, that they're healthy enough to go, that their caregiver is able to go. We're noticing that there's some barriers to care. We have some people who say, listen, I can't take the time off from work. So our board's looking at like creating a scholarship program that will be able to pay them so that they can take the time, really kind of making this part of cancer care so that more people can experience it.
Yeah, when it comes to cancer care, I have learned that it's definitely more about just the treatment and the drugs and things of that nature. But there's something about grounding yourself and being out in nature and just quieting all the noise. So I think that makes so much sense. Tell me about the funding, though. I know this is a huge space. How did all that come about?
We've been doing it. So I think we've had proof of concept over the past 25 years, number one. So we've helped thousands of people, that have done it and have given back. And we have an amazing community of generous donors who really believe in this mission of respite. It's a $25 million campaign. We've raised almost 22 at this point. We've had a couple lead gifts from local companies that have been supporting us for years. And we've had dozens of individual donors really just step up to be a part of this. So when you put all that together, there's a lot of goodness there. I mean, I will say we still have a lot of fundraising to go. We have to still raise another $3 million for the project. That's we're really intent on that. But we also have to really, reimagine the fact that we're going from about 700 people a year to over 4,000. There is a focus on capacity building and increased, programmatic funding so that we can help more families. So, in conjunction with that is not only, increased capacity building and programmatic funding, but also building an endowment to be able to help us. I mean, what we recognize is cancer is not going away. The treatment's going to be here. When we treat people with the medical side, we have to address the spiritual, the psychosocial, the mental, and the financial health. Like this is cost-free, right? Like this does not cost a family a dime, right? Like we want them to come here so they can exhale. So yesterday at the groundbreaking, I had everyone close their eyes and I said, just imagine what a family's going to feel when they pull up to this place. Right? They're going to get out of that car. and they're going to exhale. Like they haven't been able to exhale since they've heard that word cancer. They haven't, right? Those kids don't even know if their mom's going to be home when they open the door and get home from school. They don't know if their mom's going to be home or their dad, right? Like a mother who sees her daughter going through this, right? And can't do anything. You know, a father who sees his son, I just think is going to be amazing.
And then, of course, people can go to your website to learn more information and get all of the things that they need to learn about the center that's due to open at the next end of next year, right?
Yes, it's fpsrespite.org. And then we actually did name the building petesdream.org. But it's quite beautiful to see like people come together. That's really the key. If you go on to peachdream.org, you'll see like, you know, we do list our supporters. We have some amazing, like a couple of cute stories from people who've gone through our program, and we're just really delighted to be able to give back, you know, to people. So I think Pete had a vision and he lived it and he knew it. And here we are all these years. And you know, you and your own journey, I'm sure when you heard the second time, you're like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yep, absolutely. That was the reaction, you know, and like this can't be happening again. And of course, it was worse than the first.
Well, listen, we would love, I will tell you, if you would like to come up here a day, I would ha be happy to hop in the car and take you on a fantastic drive. When you stand in the middle of the space, which honestly is like standing in the middle of a forest, there is a peace that brings it to be sacred.
Yeah, you know, I can feel that even just from you describing it. I'm sure it's going to be fabulous, Marcella. Thank you so much for sharing everything that you guys are doing with Pete's Dream.
I know that your own journey has been challenging. So when he made that bucket list, 97 to 100 was don't ever give up, don't ever give up, don't ever give up, don't ever give up. And I said, like, we've never given up. That's a message to you too. Don't ever give up. You bring a lot of beauty in the world. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for those words. It's definitely something that survivors need to hear. It's so encouraging. Appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us on Bridging Philly.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 1039 FM.
On the latest Shower in the City, Shower Day Howard is visiting VisionLink, a nonprofit that connects people with vision loss to resources and community. They've launched a few new programs and they've got information on fun new eyewear.
Oh, the sound of the city. This week on Shower in the City, we are hitting VisionLink, 123 South Broad Street. We're going to visit my friend Beth. She's going to give us the update on what they've been doing lately for the vision impaired in the city. And believe me, it's a lot. Let's go. And this building, oh my gosh, guys, the revolving doors, it's old school. It's like you're walking into the movie Big. Remember that? Let's get moving. All right, front desk, here we go. I'm looking for VisionLink. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, sure. Come this way.
All right, so the moment you walk in the door, it's all smiles, love, and light. And then I ran into Melody May, who is one of the biggest players at VisionLink. And she and her team right now are working to make sure they get their clients in and out of the building safely. I got the most amazing hello.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you
Melody
again.
May.
Hey, Melody, I see you're working.
Yeah, so we just finished a workshop on resilience and growth and planting succulents.
Oh boy.
So I'll be right back.
All right, I'll wait for you right here. And while we wait, we're going to talk to a couple of clients to really get that sense of what it's like to be a part of VisionLink. And right off the bat, the first person I met was Vicki Dunbar. She is a hoot. So you are a client of VisionLink.
Of VisionLink, yes, I am. I go for iPhone classes. Today we just planted plants. We go on trips.
So what does it mean to you to be a part of this organization?
It means a lot to me because there's not a lot of people in this world that are like us, you know. We're a unique bunch and we have a good time.
It seems like a family away from home.
Yes, we have. And that's what it feels like too. Yes.
And that plant looks pretty darn cool.
Okay, and I'm going to grow it.
All right, Melody May, are we going on a trip?
We are going on a trip, and it's going to be a fantastic voyage to the eighth floor. Eighth floor, here we go. Back to Vision Link. Let me buzz you in.
So we visited you once before we got the 411 on really what the organization does.
Yes.
But now we get to see you guys a little bit further on.
Absolutely. There's lots to talk about that's new.
A lot going on.
A lot going on
today. And I love you walk
today.
In and it's so bright and uplifting. I mean, I feel already like the energy.
Well, you
pumping.
Bring the energy with you, but you're going to really experience the energy with our clients today.
So this is amazing.
Deering and Carla McCady, as you know.
Hello, hello.
Hi, ladies.
Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
I love how everything, it's just coming along so well.
It really is. There has been so much growth.
I love that it really is about building connections. If you would, introduce yourself again.
Sure. Beth Deering. I'm Chief Program and Impact Officer.
Amazing. And then you have, of course, a few others.
Hi, I'm Carly McCaney, President and CEO for VisionLink.
I love it. So let's do a rewind and an overview. So what is VisionLink?
Yeah, so VisionLink, we connect people to resources in the community. We provide services for adults with any level of vision loss. So we see older adults who might be experiencing some changes in their vision, anywhere to people who were born without sight, everything in between. We work with a lot of medical providers to ensure that that continuum of care exists. So when people are leaving from an appointment, they know what supports they have in place beyond the clinical care. I mean, you can hear it's packed in here. But yeah, I mean, in the last year, what we've seen growth with older adults, people meeting each other, building connections. It has been overwhelmingly positive. We're so excited.
Fantastic. So all of these programs, all of these amazing people, and I just talked to someone downstairs who said this was really a home away from home. Yeah. And you guys go out of your way to do this, right?
Yes. We're so excited to have people come in from the community. We go out to the community. We just love the people like to come back. When we go out into the community, they remember us. So it's just wonderful.
We also have started something really new and exciting. That's a big part of VisionLink. Yes. We started what we're calling our provider education program.
Ooh, so give it to me.
Yeah, so we started working with different community providers and giving them instruction and tools and techniques for working with people who are experiencing vision changes.
I love that. So it's really about support.
And it's about giving people, as you said, the tools that they need to best support everyone that we touch. And that means the caregivers, the family members, those in the circle of our clients while they're with us and beyond.
I love that. When you say the circle, it feels so inclusive.
Absolutely.
Right, and you guys do something very unique here. You guys actually have toys, gadgets, all the things, along with your program. So people kind of get a little bit of education on the way.
Absolutely. So not only is it teaching people techniques, it's about learning how to use devices that will help them to be more empowered to be independent as well.
Independence is the key. It's the point, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We want to make sure that any barrier someone is coming across, whether it's related to the change in their vision or wanting to live independently or aging, that we meet them where they are and give them some resources, give them some support. And like you said, education. These are the tools literally in your hands that can help you live independently.
So what's new?
So we have a lot more gadgets. We have a lot more
exciting.
We love gadgets. Yeah, so we've been trying to figure out, you know, what gadgets are going to be the most useful to someone on a day-to-day.
Right.
You know, it used to be that you were carrying maybe like 5, 6, 7 different devices in your bag. If you're just trying to run to the grocery store, you don't want to have to carry all of these things with you.
Right. Exactly. So trial and error.
We really tend to utilize phones a lot. We really encourage clients that are coming in and their family members, their friends, to utilize all of the accessibility that's built into a smartphone.
Wow. Let's talk about this smartphone and these tools. Because, I mean, when people think about it, you know, just academically, you look down at the phone, and if you can't see what you're looking at, then how does this work?
So we're fortunate enough to have two wonderful technology trainers that teach people non-visual techniques and gestures, how to interact with their phones, and leverage all of the conveniences, all of the apps, all of the things that we who have sight, people can enjoy every day. So you can check your calendar. You can text people. You can surf the internet. You can use an app that will explain things to you and read things to you.
Change the quality of your life.
Change the game. And a lot of our clients now are bringing technology with them to things like our women's group that we're hosting today.
I do see this women's group.
This women's group, I'm telling you what, independence is what they're looking for. But beyond that, we're going to bring it back to that community and that circle of empowerment where people are not only learning a skill, but they're also connecting. Talking about those Meta glasses, I would say that is a hot new device.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Meta glasses interface with a couple of apps that people use that are specifically designed for people with vision loss. Mm-hmm. So it can be a hands-free way to describe things. If you're at a museum, and we have a lot of relationships with ArtReach and other programs, we bridge that digital divide. We provide devices that will enable people to experience things that they may have enjoyed doing in the past. Mm-hmm. And with the provision of these devices, these techniques, and this training, they can continue to live a life that's full and rich.
Answer me this, of course. Big old question mark over those
over
those glasses. I mean, how do they help?
So the glasses will, that has a camera that is integrated in the frame, and there is also a speaker that is integrated in the arms of the Meta glasses. So the app integrates into the Meta glasses. So if you give it a verbal command, such as, hey Meta, what am I looking at? It will take a picture of what you're looking at or what you're facing and either read the text or describe a scene to you, which is a game changer and allows people that access that they've been missing.
Now, you know I want to play. Right. You know,
I want to
play.
Yeah.
So what's going on in here?
The women's group. Hi, my name's Marsha. I'm an access technology instructor here at VisionLink. Well, I'm an individual that also has a vision loss, and I love being able to give back to those that also have vision loss. I've just recently gotten into plants and how forgiving and tactile and sensory plants can be. We related it today to vision loss and how when you have vision loss, you need to adapt, just like plants need to adapt to the different environment that they are in.
Oh my God, Marsha, this is amazing.
So we have actually just launched a brand new website.
Ooh.
So if the goal is to have this information for people right away.
Boom, right there.
Right there. So it's www.visionlinkphl.org.
Things are out there that could really help you along the way, and VisionLink will stand side by side with you and get you across that street.
It's in our name. We link people to resources, education, and training to promote that independence that people are seeking. There is life beyond vision loss to be enjoyed.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. For more information on Bridging Philly, follow KYW News Radio on social media. And if you have any ideas for interesting features that you'd like to share, feel free to get in touch with us at bridgingphilly@kywnewsradio.com. For Sharaday Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.